From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of September 2010, National Farm Safety and Health Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Potash Corp is one step closer to being sold. General Mills says it will join a growing list of companies that have decided to make environmentally friendly purchases of palm oil. And Louis Dreyfus is looking to acquire one of its smaller rivals. Dave Dickey will have the details. During the second half hour of our program today, you can hear it online, if not on this radio station. We'll be joined by soil fertility specialist Fabian Fernandez. He's some advice on nitrogen, no-till, MAP, and DAP. It all happens during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished higher. December contract in the soft red at $7.20 for the wheat, up 22¾. March at 749.5, 21¼ higher, and the May futures at 758, up 19¼. The harvest month July soft red winter wheat up 16¼ at 744.5. Kansas hard red at 757.5 on the lead option, up 20¼. Back in Chicago, the corn pit was 22½ cents higher in the nearby harvest month December. A settlement at 521¾, up 22½ for December corn. March contract 534¼, up 22. May at 539¾, up 21½. July at 542, up 20¾. December of next year at 489¾, 14 cents higher. November beans at 1126, 32½ higher. January at 1135½, up 32¼. And July at 1147¼, up 30 cents. November of next year into beans at 1098¼, up 20 cents. October meal 770 higher at 313.20. October up 97 cents in the oil at 44.48. Livestock settled the nearby October at $96.25 for the cattle. Up a dime, or rather down a dime. Feeders were up 40 at $109.50, and hogs at $79.25 were 60 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures $76.49 a barrel, up $1.31. Ethanol at $2.04, 9¼ cents higher. And natural gas at $3.88, down 13¼ cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel for the October, $2.13¼, up $0.07. And the gold futures today, $1,296, a settlement price, up $1.70. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 197 points higher at this hour at 10,859. The dollar at 79.39 is down 0.61. And the CRB index on the day at 283.63 is up 3.49. Here's what the weather forecast is calling for as it comes from the National Weather Service. Today, sky should be mostly sunny. A high near just 74 degrees in the Urbana-Champaign area. Winds out of the west at 16 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way up to 28 for the afternoon. Mostly clear skies for this evening. A low 47. Northwest winds between 6 and 11 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, sunny skies, a high near just 70 degrees, northwest winds between 6 and 8. Tomorrow night, a 50% chance of rain, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 48 degrees. And Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy skies, a high near 66. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 47. Monday, partly sunny, a high near 71. And Monday night, mostly cloudy, a low around 51 degrees. We get to the extended forecast. It says Tuesday will be sunny with a high of 73. Wednesday, a sunny and a high of 76. And Thursday, sunny with a high of 74 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. And we talk with climatologist Steve Hilberg from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Tim Wells in Moline at 309-797-7369. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural futures markets. Along with us today to take a look at those and some of the numbers that came out from USDA at 2 o'clock, the quarterly Hogs and Pigs Report, is Mike Azuzalo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Every time, Mike, that we talk to you, it seems like it's not an easy day to explain all the time, and there was an awful lot of green in Chicago today. What happened? Why did the markets rally so much?
Lots of green and lots of way to turn the tide one day out of the last for the week, Todd. I think probably the majority of what happened today, that we've had this undercurrent of support in the weather when it comes to the soy complex, both the Canadian frost earlier this week and probably more importantly the South American dryness in Brazil in particular. Those have been underpinning the markets, the soy market, for pretty much all week this week. But today, we did see a little bit more of a pushback by the United States. The Commerce Department is going to get what looks to be a bill by the House of Representatives that is going to be allowed to call the Chinese currency an undervalued currency and consider it then an export subsidy. That allows it to then respond with a countervailing duty, and that would be able to be put up against the WTO, and they could register a complaint with the WTO. What this essentially did was drive the dollar sharply lower down to levels not seen since January, and we saw a wide range of commodity and equity fund buying. The cotton neared a 15-year high. The lumber was limit up today. So grains were a part of a bigger fund-related drive to buy again, and I think it brings up the issue of we couldn't press the technicals on Thursday's close, and then we had that weather underneath us a little bit from earlier this week, and this was a new piece of food to feed the bull, and boy, did it ever.
It fed the bull, and we probably ought to talk about it on a weekly basis, at least in the corn, because we'll just look at the December contract, 5.21¾. It was up 22.5 cents today. On the week, we would have had losses without that 22.5-cent gain, because the weekly gain was just 8.5 cents Friday over Friday in the corn pit, and I suppose it helped out the technical picture a whole lot.
It did, and I think that's where it goes back to the other 4 days of this week. We had a pretty typical wheat-led market, and in this case, the wheat was leading the corn lower up until today, and the wheat still closed down, I think, around 19 cents in the December contract for the week, but the corn did not follow as much because it got caught up with the other row crop, the soybeans, and it found some support off of that commodity fund buying. I think another thing that corn is starting to, it was feeling pressure earlier in the week from the ethanol price. It found support from that via the sugar market, and the Brazil sugar production is supposed to be in a real world of hurt this year because of the dryness in Brazil in particular. And so I think corn felt some strength from areas that earlier in the week it was feeling weakness and pressure from, among those the sugar and the ethanol and also the technicals. But I think the wheat market was falling, I think, at one point from its high that it's just made recently. It was down about 9.5% on the week.
Can we go back and explore just a bit the policy and currency and countervailing duties? Because it seems to me, and you'll have to tell me whether I'm right or wrong, that what has happened with the funds is they looked at it in the short term and said, because this pushed the dollar down, exports should be stronger as it should make our commodities cheaper on the world market. On the flip side of that, if China is our primary importer, and they are, it's quite likely, at least in soybean, but for corn as well, not actually for corn, it's quite likely that the countervailing duty would stop some of those exports because it would be putting a duty on the marketplace. Did I get that right or
yeah,
wrong?
Yeah, I think that's the huge issue that producers are going to have to deal with here in the next couple days, is that this ramps up the protectionist fears. And I hate to use the word fears because history is rife with the protectionism when the global economy is not doing as well. And so you get this short-term pop. I mean, why is gold making all-time highs? Well, it's making all-time highs because between the Federal Reserve talking about quantitative easing earlier this week and now the U.S. Congress pushing the dollar down via this bill that's going to get passed probably early next week, you are going to try and inflate the market. And that's nice in the front end and for the financial market and the risk takers. That helps them. It says, hey, the Federal Reserve is not going to climb up my back. I'll just go ahead and keep buying riskier assets because I've got the government on my side. But in the meantime, what that does is it confirms to the market that we really are hurting economically and that they're coming up with some pretty new ways to try and combat deflation, a deflation that's a lot like Japanese deflation right now. And I think that's the downside of it in the medium term. And then in the midst of that, with the protectionism at the forefront, you've got countries like Morocco this week. I talked earlier with another fellow with Morocco this week is now going to have to change and take away from some of their budget money to be able to keep their bread subsidized at the same level as it was because their price that they're paying for wheat is going up dramatically. But they don't want to pass that on to their people because they're worried about political tensions and political uprisings, much like we had in 2007, 2008. So as these prices go up in the short run, in the medium run, it's a very, very tough road to keep demand strengthening, let alone not weakening. And I think we saw that in the exports this week, and that's why wheat was leading the corn lower. We had the worst export sales for corn in 3.5 months on the weekly update. And I think lastly, just to kind of wrap up what you were talking about, because you hit the major point of risk management right now as far as how the producers handle it, the head of PIMCO put out an op-ed in the Financial Times this week, and he said, the list of industrial countries wishing to depreciate their currencies, like us right now, is not matched by a list of emerging economies happy to let their currencies appreciate, like China. So here we have it. We're setting up the trade barriers if we don't come back together and align ourselves and say, wait, we're hurting globalization at this point if we take this any further.
And I take it that means that you're looking at the marketplace and saying we need to make sales and protect ourselves.
Yes, especially for the 2011 beans. I'm getting more and more feedback from Central Illinois clients and even Central Indiana clients that have been big corn on corn guys that they're really going to be looking at beans hard with November 11 beans cracking through $11 today. I think my hedge recommendations in 2011 are going to probably be pretty similar to 2010, where we work on the beans faster and we leave the corn kind of alone until we know more about the wheat market. And, you know, just to wrap it up, because we always talk about wheat, wheat is still the leader in this whole thing. If we're going to ease political tensions, it should show up first in the wheat market, and that's where the wheat should rally first.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Todd. We'll see you later for Commodity Week.
Okay, thanks much, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
A couple of ways that you can get hold of our information other than on the radio. You can always dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. It's voicemail. We update it at 10:15 and 3:15 daily with a bit of analysis and either the opening or the closing numbers. Here's Dave now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, BHP cleared the first regulatory hurdle in its bid for Canada's Potash Corporation. But the miner still has a long way to go to pass the deal with Canadian authorities and the target's shareholders. BHP, the world's largest mining company, says it received antitrust clearance from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission to proceed with its $39 billion hostile bid for the world's largest fertilizer maker. However, BHP's offer is still contingent on other regulatory approvals. The bid is likely to face tough scrutiny in Canada, where the country's competition watchdog has already requested additional information. Environmentalists today praised a decision by U.S. food maker General Mills to stop buying palm oil from companies accused of rainforest destruction. The Minnesota-based maker of popular foods like Cheerios and Hamburger Helper says that it would try to procure all of its palm oil from, quote, responsible and sustainable sources by 2015. Already, U.S. companies Nestle, Kraft, and Burger King have announced similar shifts in policy. Louis Dreyfus, one of the world's top commodity firms, is in merger talks with smaller rival Olam International in what could extend Dreyfus's global reach and open up its closely held family ownership. Olam confirmed today that it is in talks with Louis Dreyfus over possible cooperation with a merger among the options. Louis Dreyfus Commodities arm generates some $35 billion in revenue a year. Analysts say a merger could allow a new firm to easily rival the bigger competitors such as Cargill, Bunge, or Archer Daniels Midland. A senior China negotiator says that China wants the world to seal a binding climate change treaty by late 2011, and he blamed U.S. politics for impeding talks and making a deal on global warming impossible this year. Li Gao, a senior Chinese negotiator on climate change, said his government would remain unyielding on issues of principle. Li oversees the International Climate Change Negotiations Office at China's National Development and Reform Commission, an agency that steers economic policy. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will post to our website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. Our guest, Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises on Commodity Week. You can hear it on this radio station, if not there, at willag.org. Up next, it's National Farm Safety and Health Week, and the Safety Council is reminding farmers and ranchers, of course, to take care during the harvest season. I'll have more on the nation's most dangerous job and the risk of electrocution. The stats say about 60 farm workers will be electrocuted by accident this year. Most of them will be handling equipment, anything from a long ladder to a grain auger. The point of contact, says University of Illinois Extension farm safety specialist Bob Aharon, is normally an overhead power line.
The most common accident is we're moving a grain auger around bends, and we move it around and we get it caught in a power line, and either they're moving it by hand or moving it with a tractor or whatever, gets entangled in a power line, and somebody steps off the tractor, and then you become energized when that happens and be electrocuted. So it's important that we make sure that we're moving away from the power lines. We're lowering our equipment down if it's something that can be lowered, like a grain auger. Another common accident is where we're trying to either raise a grain truck bed, maybe to take dew off of a tarp or something like that, or to unload it for some reason, and we're near an overhead power line. We always need to make sure before we raise something on a bed, or we load something up on a trailer or a truck, that we look where the overhead power lines are and make sure we're away from that when we're doing that kind of loading activity or raising a bed. Because a number of our electrocutions occur from that activity alone, where we raise the bed of a truck or we load a tractor on top of a trailer or something and get it caught in the overhead power line. And then someone steps off the machine as soon as they touch ground. Once they are, their body touches ground, still touching the equipment, they're going to be electrocuted.
Many types of farm equipment can come into contact with overhead power lines. Tractors with front-end loaders, portable grain augers, fold-up cultivators, and equipment with antennas easily can become an electrical hazard and must be operated with care. When contact is made, the operator sometimes safely gets off the machine. This can only happen if the overhead line is dead or the operator does not touch the machine and the ground when exiting. Sometimes they make the mistake of feeling safe and return to the machine. It's a deadly mistake if the overhead power line is live. If your tractor comes in contact with overhead power lines, stay on the tractor. Ask someone to contact the local utility company immediately to remove the danger. If there's an emergency, like an electrical fire, and you need to leave the equipment, Jump as far away from the equipment as possible. Do not allow any part of your body to touch the equipment and the ground at the same time. Once you get away from the equipment, never attempt to get back on or even touch that equipment. Many electrocutions occur when the operator dismounts and, realizing nothing has happened, tries to get back on the equipment. The best way to handle emergencies is by prevention. Respect electricity and avoid contact with overhead lines. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Friday afternoon, rocking and rolling along, and with us to take a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
You know, I listen to that song every Friday, and I like it so much, I thought we'd listen to it some more.
Okay.
I was thinking just, you know, it would be good to harvest, too, just running along, maybe dump it on the go. You got many people mowing today, or are they stuck out of the field?
We have started rolling again, corn and soybeans both. Beans are back under 13, so after a rain, that's not bad. Hopefully, you can get some in before they get too dry.
Yeah, that's right. And you can get them all in. Otherwise, they start chattering. They go every place, don't they? We'll find a lot of green fields out there, I suppose, maybe yet this fall. How's basis holding up, and what's it doing in the gyrations that we've had this week?
Okay, two different worlds out here. Corn, on one hand, the basis is hanging in very well, maybe even seeing some improvements out there. I think that's reflective of, maybe disappointing corn yields across at least Illinois. Beans, on the other hand, although I've got some short areas on soybeans, we're hearing a lot of very good bean yields across the country. And as the board takes off on soybeans and the crush margins aren't as good as they were last year, we're seeing bean basis widen out.
Who's closer to being done with corn in which regions? You cover from the middle of the state to the eastern side.
Central and eastern Illinois is well ahead of the western part of the state and northern part of the state. We are, I would say, over 75% done here, and we're probably a week behind the Champaign and South area.
Yeah, I suppose today when they watched the market go up, they rued the day that they rolled across the scale and sold it to you, didn't they?
There's a big difference between the guys who are just, we give them a 7-day window, and the guys who are just hitting their window were probably a lot happier than the guys who hit it about 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Because it all seems to be getting sold across the scale.
Yeah, I bet that is really, really the case. When you look at it, let's go one other place. You watch, I know, the river basis. How's that holding up?
Basically the same thing there. We've seen some improvement on river corn basis. Barge freight has been relatively cheap, and the western belt has been getting so much rain, they're not really doing anything on corn yet, so that's got freight available, so the barge freight rates have been down.
Okay, thanks much. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 487 on nearby corn and 1092 on the soybeans.
Thanks so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. He's in Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'll return in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Cherries Jubilee Day. The dessert that today is made with cherries, liquor, and vanilla ice cream was first served at one of Queen Victoria's Jubilee celebrations. The Queen was reportedly partial to cherries. The original dish, though, didn't contain ice cream, but was meant to accompany venison, especially red deer or roebuck. On this day in agricultural history in 1870, Georges Claude was born. A French engineer, he invented the neon light. He first displayed the new light on December 10th of 1910 in Paris. The first U.S. firm to take advantage of the neon sign, was a Packard car dealership in Los Angeles. In 1911, Earl Ovington became the first airmail pilot. His first load included 640 letters and 1,280 postcards, all tucked on the plane floor between his legs. In 1920, Mickey Rooney was born, one of our favorite Rooney roles as Shocky Carter in Hoosier Schoolboy. In the film, Mickey plays a farm boy who sticks by his alcoholic father and is helped by a teacher in getting his dad a job driving a milk truck. And in 1923, Nancy Green died. She was hired to represent and demonstrate Aunt Jemima Pancake Mix. At the 1893 Columbian Exposition in Chicago, the exhibit was so popular that police had to control the crowds at the Aunt Jemima booth. Fair officials awarded her a medal and proclaimed her Pancake Queen. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, joins us now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good, Todd. How are you?
Very, very well. It's Friday night, football night. I suppose that's of some concern. So let's start out with the weather forecast for Friday evening and whether we'll get a little more rainfall on top of our football players tonight?
No, I don't think so.
That's
in fact, should be a really great night. Should be perfect football weather. Cool, dry, little breezy. So if you're headed out to a game tonight, make sure you definitely bring a jacket or something because temperatures will be dropping pretty fast after sunset tonight. Dew points are already down into the mid-50s here across central Illinois and even drier up to the north. And so temperatures will drop pretty quickly tonight once we lose the sun. And with that breeze, it'll be a little nippy out there. So a perfect night for football.
It's 73 degrees outside today. Did we go to a record yesterday?
No, we did not. We fell short of the record yesterday. And
not by much.
Not by much, no. And the record for the 23rd here was 94. That was way back in 1891. And actually, there was a string of days in 1891 where we set record highs in September. Today would have been the last one of those string, but it was about four or five. So that's been a long-standing record. And surprisingly, people are under the impression this has been a really warm September. But when you look at the month as a whole, it has not been a warm September. In fact, by the time we end the month, we'll probably see temperatures across Illinois just about near normal, maybe even slightly below up north. The first half of the month was rather cool, and it's only been the last 10 days or so that have been a little bit warmer than normal, and the last week that's been really warm. So it all averages out, and we probably end up with a near normal September.
Yeah, the rest of this weekend, actually, there's a pretty cool day on Sunday, right?
Yeah, we're going to have an upper-level disturbance clipping down through the Midwest from northwest to southeast, and aside from the cool air already here, we'll get some more clouds, maybe a little rain. It'll also reinforce the cool air, so temperatures will actually be running below normal the latter part of the weekend into early next week, so definitely fall-like.
Yeah, fall-like, but not a lot of rainfall, so it should be good harvest weather?
Yeah, the rain we get over the weekend, there may be some isolated spots that get a quarter inch or so, but it's going to be pretty light, pretty fast-moving. And, in fact, that looks like about the only rainfall we're going to have now until through the next week. So once we get past this little clipper system coming through, we should be in really good shape.
Anything else you want to make sure we discuss this afternoon before I let you go?
No, it just looks like we're in for a good stretch of cool and rather dry weather. We could use the rain in southeastern Illinois and a lot of Indiana, but we can't get it right now.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Belongs and funded in part by NOAA. We appreciate him taking the time with us each and every Friday here on the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. That's also the place you can listen to Fabian Fernandez and the interview you're just about to hear on some of these radio stations. We're going to talk just a bit about soil fertility. It'll be in the back half of the Closing Market Report at willag.org. If you don't hear it on your radio station, please do visit our website. This is the Farming World News and Information from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Fabian Fernandez in studio with us today. He's the Soil Fertility Specialist for U of I Extension here on campus. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate you taking the time. We've moved very quickly in parts of the state of Illinois through harvest, and many producers are now looking at fields that, well, maybe they've even already tilled, and they're wondering about their fertility practices and what they can and can't do at this point. Let's first take up nitrogen. I suppose what they can't do is the most important thing we should discuss. What can't they do at this time of year?
That's correct. You mentioned that a lot of fields have been harvested, and people are really antsy to get on with the fall activities. One of the activities many farmers are involved in is the nitrogen application. However, it's too early to be applying nitrogen. We recommend waiting until soil temperatures are at least 50 degrees Fahrenheit below, 4 inches below the soil surface. And currently, temperatures in the soil at that depth are in the mid to upper 70s in the two-thirds of northern part of the state where fall nitrogen application is possible.
We divide, as a university extension does, the state of Illinois sort of into three sections, the northern, the southern, and the central section. Southern section is below Route 16 generally, and they have a whole different set of rules to operate by when it comes to nitrogen application and anhydrous ammonia.
That's correct. Yes, we don't recommend any type of fall nitrogen application south of Route 16 because temperatures in those soils tend to warm up too quickly, and so the chance for nitrogen loss is too big.
I mentioned anhydrous ammonia for those that are not familiar. When you see the great big white tanks rolling down the roadways behind either pickup trucks or a tractor, one of the two, or in the field, those are usually filled with anhydrous ammonia. It's the preferred nitrogen source in the state for fall application. Why is that the case?
Well, anhydrous ammonia, when it comes out as it's been applied, it's very high in pH, and so it's basically prevents bacteria. Bacteria really dislike high pH, and so it basically will keep bacteria away from that nitrogen zone for a while, and so it will protect that nitrogen from being nitrified by the bacteria.
Yeah, so the bacteria basically, you put the nitrogen in the ground, and one of the things that many worry about, including producers and environmentalists, agriculturalists across the board, is denitrification, or the idea that this nitrogen will slip away, either one, into the air, or more importantly, possibly as an environmental problem, into the water supplies. And the bacteria is the way the breakdown happens. Anhydrous ammonia is less likely to do that. And then, of course, that's the other thing. Is that what NSERV does, too? Does it stop the bacteria from operating?
Exactly. NSERV is an inhibitor. It keeps the bacteria from acting on that nitrogen to nitrify it. And then, of course, once it's nitrified, so it goes from ammonium to nitrate, it can be denitrified, and it can be lost to the atmosphere, as you mentioned. The important thing to remember is that NSERV, while it is a nitrification inhibitor, it will not stop bacteria activity for forever. It will be a while, and so the recommendation, of course, is to always try to weigh as much as possible in terms of applying nitrogen. I mean, 50 degrees is the cutoff, if you will, but if you can afford to wait a little bit longer even, that it's always useful. Because nitrification continues to occur, the bacteria are active to about 32 degrees when the soils freeze. And so while the nitrification inhibitor will keep that bacteria from acting is no last. It won't last the whole winter or the whole fall. And so it's better to always try to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah, so at the 4-inch depth, we want soil temperatures to be down to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and or because we have Indian summers, there's a calendar date, too. If you're in the far northern part of the state, maybe the second week of October, you might think about putting anhydrous ammonia on. The recommendation is generally the third week of October, about the 17th or 18th. For the upper two-thirds of the state?
That's right. The second week of October is typically, we don't recommend applying it before the second week of October in northern Illinois, third week of October in central Illinois, because while we have sometimes soil air temperatures dropping, we may have these warm-ups that occur. And so it looks like this year might not be a problem. It looks like it's still fairly warm. I don't know if we will get cool enough. It doesn't seem that way right now. But regardless, if air temperatures are dropping, we still recommend waiting until that time to apply nitrogen just in case the temperatures go back up and soils warm up again.
At what temperature does denitrification stop? Do the bacteria stop working?
Nitrification stops. The bacteria that converts ammonium to nitrate in that process stops at when soils freeze, so at 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay. That takes care of a large part of what will be happening this fall with nitrogen, but we still have to deal with, for instance, nitrogen applications to no-till fields. What are your recommendations there?
Yes, a lot of people that have no-till fields that they don't really want to disturb that soil. The other option, viable option for those type of settings is ammonium sulfate that can be applied on the soil surface and without the concern of volatilization that could occur with other nitrogen sources that, of course, are not anhydrous ammonia needs to be injected, and other sources of nitrogen that can be broadcast are not appropriate sources for the fall time. Ammonium sulfate is one of those sources that can be used. It's the only one dry product that I would recommend if you need to apply something in the fall that is a dry product. Ammonium sulfate would be that source.
All right. No urea?
No urea. Urea, it's converted very rapidly to ammonium once it's in the soil, and it can be nitrified quickly. And so the chance of nitrogen loss is just too big to risk applying urea in the fall.
We haven't talked about how to calculate how many pounds of nitrogen to put on.
That's always the question, and we have a wonderful resource for farmers to use. It's a corn nitrogen calculator. It's housed at the Iowa State University website. But all the information that it's in that calculator to help you determine what will be the optimum or economical optimum N rate has been produced here in Illinois. We have divided the state again into the north, central, and southern sections. And for corn on corn or corn on soybeans, and it's a great way to know what would be the nitrogen rate that will be most economical. And
and it's pretty easy to find. If you know the address, that's fine. If you happen to go to the IPM website and you pick up the bulletin, the address, of course, is in one of your articles from the bulletin, which is at ipm.illinois.edu/bulletin. Or you can just drop into Google and put it corn calculator. Nitrogen corn calculator.
That's correct.
And look for the Iowa site, but it's filled with data from Illinois, and that site actually has, I think, Illinois. Most of the Midwestern states are.
That's right.
Most of them are there now.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Let's go on to other types of things and activities that will be happening with fertility this fall. MAP, DAP, P and K applications.
Yes.
No need to wait in those terms to put those applications down.
That's correct. If you're antsy to get into the field and start applying fertilizers, that is what I would say. Start with those ones. It starts with...
if you can't wait.
That's right.
If you got to make a run across the field, then MAP and DAP is the way to go, huh?
That's right. Apply phosphorus potassium fertilizers, and That should be no problem, especially for potassium. Potassium is just potassium, so there is nothing else in it. MAP and DAP, of course, it has a little bit of nitrogen that accompanies the phosphorus, and the longer that you wait, the better it is in terms of keeping some of that nitrogen from nitrifying. Of course, the amount of nitrogen present in those fertilizers is not very big, nonetheless, you can go with the PNK applications.
Where do you want to place it?
It doesn't really matter if you apply it on the surface and leave it in the surface, or if you incorporate it with tillage, or if you are doing subsurface banding, that's fine. All the research that we have done shows that there is really no difference in terms of corn and soybean performance on the method that you use to apply the fertilizer, as long as you have adequate fertility.
Same thing goes for whether you apply it this year or next year, I mean annually or biannually?
That's correct. Yes, you can apply these fertilizers in an annual basis or biannual basis. The one thing that I will mention is that if you do a biannual application, so every other year, that you apply the fertilizer in front of the corn crop if possible. We have seen, especially in no-till fields, we have seen that if corn is in the second year after the application, you can have some yield reduction.
Right. So if you're in a normal crop rotation, corn soybean rotation, that is.
That's
there
right.
are many normal rotations, but that's a very popular one. You want to put this down prior to the corn. Spring you're planting corn.
That's correct.
Okay. So that, and then does it matter whether you put it on, how about fall versus spring application on these fertilizers?
Yes, it doesn't really matter either. We have looked at that question of applying it in the fall versus in the spring, and as long as the plant has that nutrient, that's really all that the plant is concerned about. It doesn't really matter whether you go in the spring or in the fall. Typically, the fall is a better time. It's a preferred time because soil conditions are drier, so you can actually drive through the field with the heavy equipment that carries a lot of weight on that fertilizer without the concern of compaction, soil compaction, which in the spring might not be the case. And, of course, typically in the fall, we have a little bit more time than when we get into the busy planting season. And so many people prefer to do it in the fall. But doing it in the spring, if that's what you prefer to do, that's fine.
How about on continuous corn? Any recommendations different on continuous corn?
Continuous corn removes a little bit more phosphorus than potassium compared to a corn and soybean rotation. So if you are going into, let's say that you're in a corn soybean rotation, you have been applying rates for this cropping system, and now you decide to start doing continuous corn for a while, it is important to keep that in mind, that overall the corn rotation will use a little bit more phosphorus than it would with a corn soybean.
And as always, I know the recommendation from the University of Illinois is soil test every 4 years.
That's right. That's correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fabian Fernandez is a soil fertility specialist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to get in contact with him, you can always do that. Just call the University of Illinois and ask for Fabian Fernandez. You can call your local extension office. You've probably got that number, and they'll put you in touch with him, too. Or you can visit him online. Just search for his name, Fabian Fernandez. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been The Farming World.
Lernard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Lernard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
The Farming World is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
The Farming World is coming to an end on the first day of October after a six-month run. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to the advancement of our core mission, distributing regionally, nationally, and internationally information and analysis of commodity markets and agricultural weather. When the situation warrants, you can rest assured we'll follow key agricultural topics and stories, and we'll make room for discussions with those that influence the political spectrum of agriculture in the closing market report, which remains in its traditional 2:06 to 2:36 time slot. Again, thank you for your support as we wrap up the farming world.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Here's a quick look at the forecast for this evening. The National Weather Service should be mostly clear. A low around 47 degrees. Northwest winds between 6 and 11 miles per hour.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Up next, bees and honey go together like bread and butter. But the bee has a huge role beyond producing something sweet, one that has huge implications for the backyard and commercial gardener alike. Lisa Brautz explores all things bees in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
My cucumbers have been a massive disappointment this garden season. The plants don't look all that healthy. There are way more male flowers than female flowers. And the female flowers, which supposedly bear the fruit, they're not. It could be this summer's heat. It could be a bad set of seeds. And I do admit to some benign neglect. But it could also be a lack of pollinators, specifically bees, in my part of the neighborhood. See, I need pollinators to come into my backyard and move pollen around from plant to plant, thus nudging my food-producing plants into, well, producing food. But actually, we all need pollinators to do their thing, because if they didn't, it would be a huge problem, agriculturally speaking. Bees have been on the decline for the past several decades for many reasons, but in 2006, the decline sped up. We started hearing about colony collapse disorder, a bizarre phenomenon where entire populations of adult bees would just disappear and die off for no apparent reason, leaving behind the hive's queen, unhatched bees, and food stores. This wasn't happening only in some far-off land either. This was, and still is, happening in the United States, wiping out entire colonies of bees in some states. Experts still don't really know what causes it. The appearance of colony collapse disorder shed new light on the practice of commercial beekeeping, of course, and how large-scale keeping of bees can affect large-scale agriculture. But it also dovetailed with the burgeoning interest nationally in local food, gardening, and related DIY projects. Robbie Nagel keeps bees in Urbana, where his friend J.P. Gogan lives, a large house backed up onto a few acres and a huge garden not far from downtown.
It goes along with a resurgence in local food systems and people saying that they want their own gardens. This is sort of the next step because honeybees and pollinators are so important for a lot of our food. So it goes along, people say, oh, I want a garden, I have a garden, that's great. And then people say, oh, okay, now my garden needs to be pollinated, and what can do that? Honeybees.
Robbie's grandfather kept bees for 30 years as a hobby. When he decided to get out of it, Robbie asked for all of his beekeeping equipment so he could learn how. Just like when I asked my grandmother to send me all of her old wooden knitting needles after she gave up knitting. Robbie's grandfather, like my grandmother, was happy to give him the tools he needed. In Robbie's case, those included hives and frames, a bee smoker, and some bee tools. He even gave Robbie a few bee suits and hats and veils. You have to wear this stuff if you want to deal with bees. And even then, there's no guarantee you won't get stung. Lately, I've been wondering if I should add a hive to my backyard situation, what with all my spare time and lack of cucumbers, so I decided to pay Robbie and JP a visit to see what it entails. After a short interview, Robbie invited me to suit up. I asked him to describe what that means.
Yeah, for us it means a full suit, head to toe, with a veil and gloves. And Some beekeepers don't wear veils. I've seen that before. Some beekeepers don't wear gloves. I've seen that before. This is only my going on my second year, so I prefer the full suit and veil until I get more comfortable with it.
Right. I opted for the suit. It wasn't the best day to check on bees. It was hot and overcast, and there was a stiff breeze. JP, who takes care of the bees when Robbie's not around, was working the smoker. Smoking the bees in their hive disrupts their communication with each other and causes them to eat a bunch of honey, which calms them down. That allows the beekeepers to do their work, and in JP's case, forego the bee suit. Today, Robbie was pulling frames out of the hive to check for honey, and he was impressed with the results.
I put this honey super on 2 weeks ago. It was completely empty, just nothing on there, brand new. And,
oh, wow, it's already capped.
They've drawn it out. We call that snow white comb because it's brand new. The comb can get dirty as the bees walk on it more. And,
this is a great shot.
This looks really nice. I'm really surprised that they were able to do this in a couple of weeks.
I learned from Robbie and JP that keeping bees in a residential urban area is actually really good for the bees and good for making honey, thanks to the huge variety of plants that are grown by people in their gardens. Outside of town, where people grow lots and lots of one or two things, there isn't as much in the way of plant diversity for the bees. Bees can also be harmed by crop dusting in rural areas, so keeping them in town might be safer for them too. The one thing urban dwellers wanting to keep bees might have to reckon with, though, is neighbors. Fortunately, JP's neighbors and housemates are cool with it. Beekeeping culture is alive and well in Urbana-Champaign, too, with the Central Eastern Illinois Beekeepers Association around for assistance, education, and inspiration for bee geeks of all ages, even those who don't have their own bees. They can use this informal network to share equipment and advice and mentor each other, too. Maybe it's not the same as having a grandpa show you the ropes, but it helps. I might decide to go for it if I can clear it with my family and the neighbors. Yep, I've scoped out the perfect location for a hive in my backyard. Stay tuned.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for an In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. or call us at 217-333-7300.